She was taken in her pajamas, no shoes, her medication left behind. Those are the words of Savannah Guthrie, and disturbing new details revealed by her about the night her mother vanished, as disclosed in her first TV interview with who else other than her own show, the Today Show, the most popular or one of the most popular morning shows in all of America. She talked about a back door being propped open, blood at the scene, a doorbell camera, which we knew about, being ripped off, and a chilling question that's been discussed in her own house. Was Nancy Guthrie targeted because of Savannah? And it appears Savannah is holding on to quite a bit of guilt as a result of that answer.
Welcome to the global phenomenon, Surviving the Survivor, where we bring you the best guests in all of true crime. Here's your host, Emmy Award-winning journalist, Joel Waldman.
What's up, SDS Nation? Welcome to Surviving the Survivor. This is the global phenomenon, bringing you the very best guests in all of true crime. And tonight, we're going to do something just a little bit different. It is all over the internet tonight. Savannah Guthrie finally speaking out about the disappearance of her mother, Nancy Guthrie. Hard to believe it is day 54 here. And she spoke to her co-host, Hoda Kotb, at the Today Show, who actually came back to fill in for Savannah Guthrie during this long absence. But the two are close friends, and they were speaking this morning about Savannah and her mother's disappearance, the 84-year-old mother of Savannah Guthrie. We're going to watch some key moments together. We're going to pause, analyze, and get reaction from our panel. And as you know, we've got the best guests in all of true crime, headed tonight by the godfather of true crime, Phil Ramos, three-time officer of the year in Las Vegas, retired homicide detective, infiltrated the Cuban mob. He was at Tupac Shakur's autopsy. Name a guy with more experience. I'm curious to hear. Next up, we've got Dr. Casey Jordan, a lawyer who I finally met in person, just as sweet in person as on camera. She's an attorney, a criminologist, a behaviorist. She studies the minds of depraved people, like the person or people who took Nancy Guthrie. And last but not least, Mike Alcazar. Might be the very first time, I hope I pronounced it correctly. Mike is retired NYPD and a very smart mind when it comes to law enforcement and breaking things down. Phil Ramos, let me just start with you on a macro picture. You know, she is a communicator for a living. She's host of the Today Show. And 54 days in, she finally sat down with her own show. How important do you think this was, not only from her perspective to get information to the public, but also sort of from a healing perspective for her to get things off of her chest?
Well, I think that's the key issue, is she's progressing in her grieving process. I don't know that the information was that enlightening that she got. It was there was a couple of interesting points, but this was clearly for her peace of mind and for her to start getting some of that load off of her shoulders, because she's got to be carrying so much guilt. If the insinuations are accurate that, you know, in my view, that's a way out there motive, some sort of revenge against her. But you know, you never know. Either way, she's got to be carrying an enormous amount of guilt, as are the other her siblings. So I think it shows a small step forward in her recovery process and for this nightmare scenario that no one should have to go through.
Yeah. We've got a slight adjustment on our tagline. You can see it here. Best guests, best pets. We're dog and cat friendly show, and oftentimes we hear them in the background while most hosts take cover and are terrified of hearing dogs barking on live YouTube vision, whatever you call this. I embrace it. So any barking dogs or cats out there, not barking cats, but you get what I'm saying, meowing cats, we welcome it all. By the way, cool show on Netflix. I have no reason to promote, but I was talking about it with Mike, NYCD Detective. Is that what it's called, Mike?
I think NYPD Homicide, maybe. I'm not really sure.
You'll find it. It's on the homepage of Netflix and goes into three different episodes. They've done a season before, but really well done. And there you go. Mike, NYPD's finest. Watched an episode last night, and I will watch another episode tonight, mainly because I don't really have much of a life. But Dr. Casey Jordan, to you, just sort of a broad reaction. Was this interview, you think, in a way more for Savannah and her mental well-being, just as much as it was for the public and the insatiable appetite for the story?
Yes, and I don't know Savannah well, but I don't believe she would do this gratuitously, you know, for ratings. I saw it as a necessary step, a segue, if you will, for her to return to the Today Show at some point in the future. There's no way she can just suddenly show back up on set and act like it never even happened. It just wouldn't work. So you may be seeing more of these interviews as time goes on. And certainly, it's reestablishing a relationship with her audience. It is continuing to see her in her authentic, raw form with real tears about this devastating tragedy that may never have an answer. And I think that this is all part of a carefully, if you will, choreographed process by which Savannah, for her own mental health and well-being, I know she wants to go back to the Today Show because, you know, having nothing to do only makes it worse. Retiring would only make it worse. So I definitely, you know, we've all been wondering, will she go back? I think that she will. And I think that this was one of the first steps in the process of putting her back on air as Savannah Guthrie, host of the Today Show in the mornings, without us looking and going, Savannah, oh, the tragedy. You need to get her back to the place where she's Savannah, the host. And this interview was, I think, the first step in that process. But we learned a lot from it, too. So two purposes to that interview.
Yeah, we did learn quite a bit. Obviously, you'd assume law enforcement knows everything there. But Mike, to you, in your opinion, I mean, is the not knowing the hardest part? I mean, I know you've had to go and make death notifications and tell people things that they don't necessarily want to hear. Here, there's, in essence, nothing to report other than the investigation is ongoing. How tough is that on her and the family?
It must be horrible for her and her family, not knowing where their mom is. And then, you know, you have to continue with life. She's still holding hope that somebody has information, that somebody will do the right thing. I agree with Casey that, you know, it's something basically that she had to address because before she gets back on the show. I don't think they'll probably talk about it again when she's working unless there's some kind of a break in the case. So, yeah, it's got to be horrible. I watched it. I know everyone felt so bad for her. I mean, It was just horrible. It was so sad to watch.
Yeah, really, it really was. There is talk in the rumor mill that she could be back as soon as next month. And I have to agree with Dr. Casey that, instead of having this really hard landing coming in and having to explain everything, they're doing this sort of preemptively. So when she gets back to work, it'll be, you know, she'll have an easier time at it. Without further ado, there are like seven clips here that total close to 30 minutes. And by the way, there's going to be more tomorrow. Phil and Scott will be here the final Friday of every month, which is tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern time. And they'll break down the back half of this tomorrow, 5 p.m. Eastern. But let's start here. This is Savannah Guthrie talking about how she first learned that her mother, Nancy, went missing.
Your mom went missing. Tell me what you were doing and what happened.
I had given Mike for Christmas a boys trip to go play tennis. And so he had been gone for the weekend. So I took my kids actually to Carson's. Mm. So we had a beautiful, fun night together. And then I came home and really just got home at the same time that Mike came home. We were just saying hi, putting down our stuff and the kids were running around. And my sister called me and I said, is everything okay? Mm-hmm. And she said, no. She said, mom's missing. And I said, what? Yeah. What are you talking about? She said, she's gone. And she was in a panic. I was in a panic. I'm like, call 911. Yeah. She's like, I did. We've called them. They're here. And we thought that she must have had like some kind of medical episode in the night, and that somehow, you know, the paramedics had come because the back doors were propped open.
I'm going to hold that there. I'm going to periodically break in here. Phil Ramos, obviously talking about hearing from her own sister, Annie, telling her mom's missing. And she's like, what? And she tells her she's gone. And then at the very end of this portion of it, she reveals that the back door was open. I mean, first, just the raw emotion still 54 days later from a guy who basically studied human behavior inside the interview room. How raw is this still for her?
As raw as it gets. You know, I mean, she is literally bearing her heart and soul to America. And you could just see it all over her face. I mean, the frown, you know, the brow ridges, it's just, that's as sincere and as heartbroken as a person can get, in my view. And I think it shows a lot of inner strength on her part to be able to sit there and relate all of this, because at any given minute, something's going to hit her and she's going to relive it and she's going to break down. But, you know, so far she's holding up pretty damn well for what she's been through.
Yeah. Dr. Casey, to you, Dayton, I can't really see it because I'm blocking myself. Back doors, plural. Thank you for the correction. Your take on the emotion, but also some of the information being revealed here, Doctor.
Yeah, let's go with Andrea Dayton Wheels. Back doors jumped out at me the minute that I heard it, because I haven't been there, but I didn't know there were two doors. And we know that the droplets of blood that we believe have been matched to Nancy were on the front of the house. The idea that it was propped, and I know we're going to see more, and we're going to hear Nancy, we're going to hear Savannah talk about what her theory is. But the propping of the doors supports my initial theory that this is very likely the work of one person. I know it's more likely the work of two people, but you would prop a door if you had to carry a heavy person out of it or drag them and you didn't have anybody else to help you. You know, it doesn't really matter. We split hairs a lot. But a lot of people have said, no, there've got to be at least two people. And to me, this supports the idea that it could have been the work of one idiot, whether burglar or kidnapper, we don't know. But the idea that there were two doors, I don't know if she just misspoke or whether there were two back doors that were propped open. But that definitely pinged for me when I heard it the first time. Like, why would more than one door be propped open?
And by the way, Dr. Casey, I didn't know this myself. Apparently, there are three back doors that were all open. So I don't know if that affects how you're looking at it.
Well, that certainly does give us a little bit more insight about. And remember, we believe that whoever was in there was there for about 42 minutes. I mean, were the doors propped open so that they could carry stuff out? Just because we haven't heard about a burglary doesn't mean that it didn't happen. In other words, things being taken. Just because we don't know the items were taken doesn't mean it didn't happen. So was it one person, two people? Was it a gang of burglars? Did the person come in the front door and then open the back door so that the friends could come in and start transporting things, including Nancy, out the back door? It does just give us always, you know, in the wings, wondering what the details are, a little more insight about what happened that night. But mostly we look at Savannah and we can just put ourselves in her shoes, getting that phone call. And of course, you know, she wants to know all these details just as much as we do, but it's for her, it's in real time.
Yeah. And Mike, curious from you, you know, just how she explains the sort of the exchange of knowledge between her and her sister, which she finds out and she says, mom's missing, what? And her sister just answers, yeah, she's gone. I mean, you can see she's going back like in her memory, recalling that had to be a super eerie conversation. And then you couple that with a lot of the attention that was on her sister and her her significant other. Curious what you make of that. And then also what we were just talking about, that three or four people, there's a comment here. my question regarding it being one person, that lunatic Wade Wilson, if you guys know him, who's now on death row in Florida, he couldn't carry one of the women that he had murdered. And he's a 6'2", big, strong guy. The other night on the show, Mike, we had Pima County homicide detective retired Kurt Dabb, who said he believes it was at least three, if not four people. So your thoughts on the number of people, but also that discussion about the mom being missing.
When I heard that the door was propped open right away, I was thinking back in the day when I was a rookie undercover and I'm going into a place as an undercover. It was unfamiliar. And I made this mistake. I made this very mistake. I opened the door and I propped it open because I want my team to follow me from behind. I didn't realize there were video surveillance. So right away, I'm thinking he's leaving that door open because somebody else is following behind him potentially. So that's what I thought. I think maybe he's working with other people, might have been the first person at the door and just leaving it open for his team. Her recalling the sister notification on a personal note, I had something like that similar happen to me and my father. You know, my father lives alone. And my brother calls me up and says that, you know, we haven't heard from dad. So we're thinking same thing. I think that Casey said that, you know, he might have had a medical emergency. So it definitely, you know, it hit home for me because I know we were very worried about my father, just like they're worried about what happened. You're a little bit confused. Call the police, go there. What are we going to do? So her recalling that is, I'm sure, very emotional. I mean, my father is okay, but I mean, just thinking about like her mother, who probably means the world to her. My mother passed away when I was very young, and she's, you know, my favorite person. And when she passed away, I'm telling you, and it was natural, but I thought of my mother every day for like, I don't know how many years, but every day. So I can only imagine what Savannah's going through, not knowing what happened to her mother and perhaps having a little bit guilt. It's got to be horrific.
Yeah, sorry to hear that, Mike. My mom's 86, and everyone knows how tight I am with her, so I feel your pain there. Cooler by the lake, back to Phil, and then we'll continue on with the video here. Couldn't they have propped the doors, Phil, so an accomplice could get in? But I just want to get your take here. I mean, you sort of offered it up a little bit, but just brings me back to Kurt Dabb, because when he said three or four, it really made me think, like, this could be a lot more than sort of people have been giving credit, you know, to whoever did this. A lot of people think it was just a sloppy job done by amateurs. I'm not suggesting that that's not the case, but maybe we have to look in a different direction too, that it was, you know, very well planned out ahead of time. And that's why we're on day 54 here with multiple accomplices.
Yeah. And I'm one of those people that subscribe to that first theory that this was a bungling idiot that woke her up and things went bad. As these little bits of information come out, you know, it gives me some pause now. So relative to the door or doors being open, a lot of people in a nice climate leave their doors open for the fresh air. I do that myself, but I'm always home when I do that. So what is the significance? Were those doors open when she left that night, or were they left open by the bad guys, or just exactly how did what was the significance of the doors being open? There's some details there that have to be worked out. If the bad guys left the doors open, then it's absolutely more than one person. No, there's no doubt about it. If this was an abduction purposely, then there's going to be at least two, maybe three people, and they're going to come in and out. But that begs the question, if that was how they're going to egress, then why bother going to the front and making yourself known and, you know, looking like a clown up there trying to get in and cover up that camera? Why not use the back door to go in and out? There's a lot of questions relative to that, the door or doors being open. So did the first responders, the first people there, see the doors open? That's going to be key. Or did somebody just responding to the scene leave the doors open? That's pretty significant. The fact that the doors are open is a significant development, but how did those doors come to be left open is pretty important too.
Yeah, and Mike, I mean, are these the types of questions that detectives sit up at night thinking to themselves in bed when they're home for the few hours in between working on the case? By the way, is she referring to the sliding glass doors from Janet Jacob being open? Because if it was referring to it, I might refer to them as doors, including the screen door. But Mike, I mean, are these detectives up at night wondering, you know, exactly what Phil Ramos just said? Well, why is a back door propped open, but they were, you know, getting rid of the Nest camera on the front door? Why not just go out the back door then?
Yeah, 100%. What Phil said is absolutely correct. All the theories that, you know, the people in the chat are coming up with are 100%. That's exactly what we do in the squad, right? We're going to come up with theories. We're going to bounce it off each other. What's plausible? What's not? Why did they do this? Why did they do that? Did they attack from both sides, making sure no one gets out? Maybe we don't know the timeline, right? We don't know if that guy tried the front door simultaneously with the people in the back, perhaps. So yeah, absolutely. That's exactly what we do. What you do on your podcast is exactly what detectives do when they're trying to figure out a motive or some kind of a theory why this happened, how this happened.
Mm. Lena joining us, I think from Spain. Here we go. This is, let me get rid of this. All right. So this is Savannah continuing to talk about learning that her mom is missing. And then we'll get Casey on the back end of this.
You know, And that didn't make any sense. We thought maybe they came and there was a stretcher and they took her out the back. But her phone was there and her purse was there and all her things. And it just didn't make any sense. So, you know, Annie and Tommy had already called all the hospitals, but then I'm like, I'm going to call the hospital. So then I started calling the hospitals and the police were there and talking to her at the same time. And it was just chaos. Yeah. I mean, from the very early moments, you know, Annie and Tommy were saying, this isn't that case that you are used to where someone wanders off. She can't wander off. My mom, she was in tremendous pain. Yeah. Her back was very bad. You know, she was trying to, on a good day, she could walk down to the mailbox and get the mail, but most days not. So there was no wander off. And the doors were propped open.
Yeah.
And there was blood on the front doorstep. And the Ring camera had been yanked off.
Yeah.
And so we were saying, this is... Yeah.
Do something.
This is not okay.
Yeah.
This isn't, something is very wrong here.
Yeah.
That is clip one about obviously her finding out that her mom's missing. There's a super chat here, Casey. Do you think this was revenge? I mean, we're going to get to it, but Savannah questions, is it her own celebrity that caused this? And I think she's feeling tremendous guilt. But your thoughts on the revenge factor?
Oh, she's going to talk about her guilt slow, you know, in another clip tremendously, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I mean, what I'm hearing here is just the desperation. And I know that Phil and Mike have seen it. We know when you're responding to people and they just want you to get through the most obvious scenarios because in their heart, they know none of those are going to work, right? So you'd have no doubt that the police are probably saying, listen, does she have memory issues? Did she wander away? Would she have done that? And they have to. They have to work through the most obvious explanation first. But this can be infuriating and frustrating to the family because they just want to be like, no, that wouldn't have happened. She wouldn't have left her phone. She can't walk 50 feet. She's reliving that frustration that she would have had with law enforcement, trying to calm them down, trying to say the truth, which is 95% of people are recovered in the first 48 hours and, you know, the rest are recovered within 30 days. And you can just see that she's reliving that and that she's frustrated with time that may have been lost with all having to work through the most obvious explanations first. Again, the blood on the front doorstep she's talking about now, but we don't know that the police actually noticed that from the outset. There are people out there who think that Dave, you know, Brian Enten and other reporters, the ones who brought that to their attention. So I think that we're getting a little hint of frustration as she talks about those first few minutes when she's declaring, my mom wouldn't have walked off. She wouldn't have left her phone. She wouldn't have left her stuff. And the doors are propped open. Okay, she's been kidnapped. You see, this is leading up to the whole kind of mind-blowing idea. Did someone take her as a kidnapping for ransom? Was it a for-profit abduction? Is something we still don't know the answer to, but we're going to find out more about what Savannah's theory is about that. Right.
Which is, spoiler alert, yes, for the most part. All this year, back to Phil Ramos, I mean, to A.R. Wyoming's point, you know, was this revenge? If it was, then you've got to ask, revenge for what, Phil? And how do you get closer to that answer? I mean, you've got to assume that authorities have spoken many times to NBC security over any possible threats that came into, you know, NBC Universal and the Today Show. But how do you address this? You know, her husband has a job where he's dealing with issues within the government. But how do you figure out what it's revenge for, potentially?
Yeah, that's a big question, man. The big if is, was this a revenge crime? So let's say, okay, yeah, it was a revenge crime. Why? What did Savannah do so badly that they're going to punish her by causing her this grief and all of this torment and taking her mom? Okay, so you go take the mom for a revenge crime against Savannah. Why do that? Why not go after Savannah? So, and while we're on this topic, I wanted to pick Dr. Casey's brain a little bit. Casey, we discussed organized versus unorganized criminal behavior.
Yep.
If this was a revenge thing, my question would be, why didn't they let her wear her shoes? And why did they leave her phone and devices there at the scene? To me, that lends towards oh crap, look what we've done, let's get out of here, versus the organized, yeah, let's get her out of here because this is what we're doing and forget the other stuff. What are your thoughts on that?
First of all, I think if this were revenge, they would be rubbing Savannah's nose in it. You would not have proof of life.
Yes.
You would have proof of death.
Exactly.
Because that, you know, but no return of body and no answers. I mean, if they were really trying to destroy her in the worst possible way mentally, they would have sent videos of them torturing her mother, something like that, right? So, and usually if you've got somebody who wants to do a crime for revenge, they want you to know it and they want you to know why, okay? Yeah. Otherwise, it's just like, what's the point? So taking, and by the way, I don't know why these things stick with me, but Savannah says her mom was taken in her pajamas without her shoes. I don't know how we possibly know that unless there was video of her being removed from the house. We don't know if she was in pajamas or a nightgown. I could never tell you how many shoes my mother or even I have to know that one, that they were 100% all there. I just think she's kind of like setting a stage and creating a storyline of how she imagines it. But I wouldn't take any of that as fact, that her mom was wearing pajamas or didn't have shoes on. But you're right. It could be revenge. It could be profit. It could be the bungling burglar. Right now, I would say any of those could be possible. I still am going with bungling burglar because of the lack of proof of life, death, captivity, or anything else.
Interesting. And that $1.2 million is out there. Mike, to you, there's a comment from Kelly McLennan. Things have been different if it was treated like a homicide from the beginning, which it essentially, I mean, I think they brought in homicide detectives, you know, fairly early on. A lot of criticism about releasing the scene, which is sort of a different story. But just curious, you know, if they locked that scene down and cordoned it off with tape and didn't let the pizza guy, the gardener, Amazon man, and all these other people come by and treat it like a real serious homicide, not knowing, would that have changed the calculus in your opinion?
Yeah, I think so. If they treated it like a homicide from the get, once they find the blood and whatever, the door propped open, they might have been able to preserve the crime scene a little bit quicker, and maybe it wouldn't have been contaminated, right? They should have made that crime scene huge, right? They made it small, then they had to expand it. Now they're going into the desert. I think, you know, the first rule of a crime scene is you got to make it as large as possible. You can always shrink it down. And I think they didn't do that. And I don't think they did a good job gathering all the evidence. because we see that they came back 2-3 times setting up other crime scenes. So I think they fumbled the ball a little bit there.
Yeah. And Casey, I mean, you bring up, a really excellent point. And it's not to beat up on Savannah in any way, but she, I think it's fair to say she's fairly well traumatized by this, and she might be sort of imagining or picturing it happening a certain way, but she's talking about, she literally uses the word chaos, when she finds out that all her things, the cell phone, were left behind. Annie and Tommy start calling the hospitals, and so she starts calling the hospitals, and then she makes this point, which I completely believe and understand. She can't wander off because she's got tremendous pain walking. She's also cognitively all there. I guess, what does that tell you when she reiterates there's no way, we see with dementia patients who, just leave that house and they don't know that they're wandering away, that that's not a possibility here.
No. And, Savannah wants everyone to know her mother was taken. But also, we know just a little bit about Nancy's personality from seeing her on the Today Show and from Savannah's description of her mother as feisty, as perky, as a go-getter. OK, a woman with energy, even if she had pain and back problems, she was 100% cogent. That makes me think that Nancy, again, as long as we're storytelling, probably tried to reason with her captors, probably tried to, if at all possible, unmask them. Or I wouldn't take her as a big fighter, but she's not the kind of person who I think would tremble in fear, right? And I get that they have the element of surprise. I have to throw out there that we don't even know, again, the number of people, and if that bungling person on the front porch even knew somebody was home. We don't even know that he knew that this lady was in there or that she was Savannah Guthrie's mother. Things we just don't know. But the way Savannah tells the story, I do think because in her line of work, she is a professional storyteller. That is what she does on the Today Show, tell stories. I think she might be filling in the gaps. She talked earlier in another interview about her mother taken from her bed. And I was like, well, how do you know that she was taken from her bed? How do you know that she wasn't, taken while she wandered down the hallway towards the bathroom? And this is just Savannah, I think, filling in the blanks of every daughter, every child's worst nightmare if their parent went missing under these circumstances. You fill in the blanks, you fill in the gaps of the worst possible scenario, without shoes, in her pajamas, torn from her bed. But we just need to stand back and go, we don't know that any of that is fact.
Yeah. Speaking about standing back, when we talk about this, we're so mired in it. But when you step back just for a second, think about 54 days. Forget that it's Savannah Guthrie's mother for a minute. Just any person. I mean, this is a tremendous amount of time for an elderly person to just be snatched up. I mean, it's not something that we hear about often at all. But okay, so here it gets a little more heartbreaking. With Savannah apologizing to her mom. Let's take a look at this clip. There are six more of these to go.
You guys talk about what possibly could have happened, like what could have happened, what went down? Did you?
I think my brother, my siblings are so amazing. My brother, he spent his career in the military and worked in intelligence and is a fighter pilot and is brilliant. And he saw very clearly right away what this was. Yeah. And even on the phone, when I called him, he knew.
He knew.
And he said, I think she's been kidnapped for ransom. And I said,
yeah.
What? Yeah. Well, why? What? And then, it sounds so, how dumb could I be? But I didn't want to believe. I just said, do you think because of me? And he said, I'm sorry, sweetie, but yeah, maybe.
I'm going to stop it right there. I mean, Casey, you got to come to you on this. The emotion there is palpable and overwhelming. And she's feeling, you can just see it, tremendous guilt. How do you, I mean, I know you're not a psychologist in the sense of counseling people, but how do you tell someone that it's, you know, it's not them? I mean, it might be her because of her stardom, but, you know, it's not her fault.
Well, and I hope she has some good counseling, and I'll bet she does. The bottom line is that it's human nature, especially when you go from the process of your parents spend the first, I don't know, 20, 30, 40 years of your life protecting you. And then at some point the tables turn and you turn into your parents' protectors as they age. And this, she feels like she is her mother's protector. But again, she has put her mother on air. At this exact moment, everything is cascading in her brain that would make this her fault, because this is what you do when you are in charge of protecting another human. You think, you go to worst case scenario, and you think it has to be because I put her on the Today Show. It has to be because I am Savannah Guthrie. It has to be because I have money. And none of that. There is no proof of any of that. So what you have to do, just cognitive behavior theory, is go, where is the evidence? Where is the evidence? Where is the evidence? Where is the evidence? If there is no evidence of that, you stand back and you say, go to best case scenario. Okay, this has nothing to do with you. This person didn't even know who Nancy Guthrie was, you know. And by the way, for all we know, even though statistically we know it's unlikely that Nancy is still alive, we have no proof that she's dead. So will you just try to take through that cognitive behavior theory, where's the evidence? There is no evidence that she's dead, that it was you, that it had anything to do with the Today Show. Let's assume she is still out there, she's alive, and that she might come home. And that is what you have to do if you're going to get out of bed and put one foot in front of the other every single day and get on with life, having one big question mark in your head that you may never get the answer to.
Wow.
Assume the best, not the worst.
Yeah, that's a very scary proposition, not getting an answer. There's a question for you again, Dr. Casey from Boston, Sarah, friend of the show. Dr. Casey, based on what we know, what do you think the psychology of the abductor slash abductors is like?
All depends on what their motive is. And we've talked about revenge. We've talked about kidnapping for profit. But I really think that if that were the case, you know, their psychology would be greed. You don't need a PhD for this. It's kind of obvious. But again, because we have no proof of life, no proof of death, and we have this really just bungling, sending a request for Bitcoin through the media. We don't see it like this. It goes to the family. It goes to the police. You want to keep it hush hush. You don't want to put it in the media because then everyone's looking for you. There's so much about this case that does not ring true to what we have in the textbooks, and kidnappings for profit are very rare. So we don't have a lot of cases to compare it to. But the psychology of this person right now, they are a scared little rabbit in a rabbit hole who knows that they, if they ever raise their little head and try to return Nancy, give evidence, get that $1 million, they will be caught and their life will be over. So for the rest of their life, one guy, two guys, three guys. I think it's one, because I think if it were a bigger group, they would have turned on each other by now. And you would have somebody turning in the other for the $1 million. That's the only reason I think it could be the work of one person, is because the strong silence. But I mean, the bottom line is, if it's one person, two people, three people, they will be looking over their shoulders and sleeping with one eye open for the rest of their lives. Their psychology is fear and paranoia from here on out.
Well, let's hope they're scared enough to eventually come forward. I don't know if that's going to happen. But Mike, what about this comment? I think Savannah knows more details than we know. What's your guess? Do you think police said, hey, just make sure you don't mention this or this, because we've got to keep that between ourselves?
Yeah, I think we're learning a lot more now with this interview that Savannah did. So I think she's giving us a little bit of more information that she might have been privy to before. She's still not giving a lot, but she's saying that her mom was taken from the bed. There might be evidence that her mom was taken from the bed and her clothing is missing. So, or not missing, I should say, you know your mom's routine, you know what they normally wear. And if it's still there, something's telling her, or maybe the police told her this is what's happening. Yeah, I think she's giving us a lot more information than we knew before. I lost my train of thought. I forgot what I was going to say, but as I'm watching it, I was thinking a lot of things, and now it'll come back to me. I'm old, but I'll get back.
Hey, it happens to me all the time. Don't worry. And it might be happening right now. But Phil, One of the interesting things here was obviously her relationship with her brother, who's a fighter pilot, which is about as, you know, badass as it gets. And you have to be, everything has got to be on point to be a fighter pilot. You know, in the American Air Force, there's a big Air Force base, by the way, in Tucson called Davis Monthan. But he apparently tells his sister right away, he calls her sweetie, that it was a kidnapping for ransom. I'm curious, what are your thoughts that he came out from, you know, the get-go and said this is a kidnapping for ransom, that he was astute in that way?
Well, basically it's because in those first few hours you didn't know anything at all, and the only thing that made any kind of sense would be that kidnap for ransom, or like we've been talking, this bungling idiot just screwed up a burglary and it went bad for him. So fighter pilots are a different breed, man. They know stuff before it even happens. So I completely understand his instinct telling him that's what it is. I would probably go with that same reaction if I were in his shoes. But as time goes on and as evidence goes on, things are going to happen to either support that or dismiss it. And like Mike was saying, this, you don't have something like this as a planned abduction and make all the mistakes that this guy made at that front door. You just don't do that. So that's what, and I think Dr. Casey was alluding to the same thing. With the amount of mistakes that this person made and the way he bungled the front, I just don't see this being any kind of organized attempt to, whatever, if it's revenge or get money, whatever, any other reason other than he screwed up a burglary. Nothing else fits, man. None of those other little pieces make sense. And if it doesn't make sense, then it's, it doesn't make sense. So, man, it's just a wait and see. And as far as her giving out little bits of information, not intentionally, but we do that a lot, because we find, if we find some questionable thing at the scene, we'll go to those closest to the victim, in this case Savannah and her siblings, and say, hey, we found this and that. Is that normal, or does that stand out for any reason, or do you think there's an explanation for this? It could be, you know, well, there was a pair of shoes under the bathroom or something, you know, something innocuous that we didn't think made sense. So you ask them that, and then if it's significant, you say, look, please don't let that out. These are things that we have to hold close, but we just needed some clarification by somebody who would know that. And that's how you establish your victimology.
All right, I'm going to play this out now, and I'll play through more of them because we've got a bunch more to go here.
But I knew that.
You did?
I hope not. I mean, we still don't know. Mm-hmm. Honestly, we don't know anything.
No.
We don't know anything. So I don't know that it's because she's my mom and somebody thought, oh, that girl, that lady has money, we can get make a quick buck. I mean, that would make sense, but we don't know. But yeah, that's probably, which is too much to bear, to think that I brought this to her bedside, that it's because of me. And I just say, I'm so sorry, Mommy. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry to my sister and my brother and my kids and my nephew and Tommy and my brother-in-law. I'm like, so sorry. I'm so sorry. If it is me, I'm so sorry. I'm so
Casey, that is brutal right there. Just coming back to you, you're the closest thing we have tonight to an actual psychologist. She kind of is in, you know, self-preservation mode, because she then goes back and says, honestly, we don't know anything. Don't know. It's because she's my mom. And then she flips back the other way and says, it's too much to bear. And then she apologizes to her whole family. I'm so sorry. Sorry to my sister, my brother, my kids, which leads me to believe that she really is blaming this on herself. And she shouldn't be. She has a job. There's no, you know, there's, look how many people are on air reporting in high profile positions. And if that's the case, it could happen to any of them. It's not because of them. It's because of the whoever these depraved people are, person is. But she is suffering and blaming herself, no doubt. You agree?
That is just human nature in the moment of tragedy. And I have to go back. I want to just reach out and hug her and go, Savannah, let's not go down that road. Let's go back to what you started with. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know. We don't have any proof, any evidence that you, Savannah Guthrie, has anything to do with this. And I all I can do is just say, let's say that over and over again until she believes it. There is no evidence that her status as the Today Show host has a thing to do with this. I mean, if that was in the communications that had been, you know, received about give us Bitcoin and give us 4 million, give us 6 million. Maybe if they had wanted to say there's a line in there that goes, Savannah has more money than God, give us 6 million. That would make you think, okay, maybe it has something to do with Savannah. But we have no evidence of that. So that's just, I mean, I think all of us have been in horrible situations where something completely tragic has happened. I lost my own mother in a house fire, right? And you just go and you go, oh, you know, if this hadn't happened or if that hadn't happened, you know, we could have avoided it. And sometimes just horrible things happen. In this particular case, it is a human man-made crime, but we have no proof it has anything to do with Savannah. So I guess I know Savannah will see this, but I guess I just want her to know it has nothing to do with you. Until we know otherwise, you stick with the fact that we have no evidence whatsoever that this abduction is related to Savannah Guthrie. And that's where your brain goes, but you have to just deal with it, manage it, push it away.
Well said. Okay. So here's the part about the ransom notes, and it gets interesting here. We'll pivot to the detectives right after this.
How brilliant my brother is, but my sister is equally brilliant and also has special powers of intuition and faith and language and depth and heart. And I feel like we came together with all these beautiful gifts that came from our mom and dad and from Chrome God, and somehow together we did our best to come up with the words to say. And I haven't posted one thing or said one thing that the three of us haven't decided together. It is surreal. It's, how is it possible that we are having to make a video speaking to a kidnapper who took an 84-year-old woman in the dead of night in her pajamas with no shoes, without her medicine, this little person, and to beg for mercy?
The ransom notes or ransom requests came. Did you believe those to be real?
There are a lot of different notes, I think, that came. And I think most of them, it's my understanding, are not real. And I didn't see them. But, you know, a person that would send a fake ransom note really has to look deeply at themselves.
Yeah.
To a family in pain. But I believe the two notes that we received, that we responded to, I tend to believe those are real.
Really?
Bill Ramos, that's interesting and also really important. So just to differentiate, they get a couple of notes. demanding crypto. Then there's the person who contacts TMZ to say, well, I know where the suspect is. Send me crypto as well. But she believes that two of the notes are legitimate. I could see her kind of hesitating there a little bit. And I think she was probably collecting her thoughts to make sure what she was saying was okay. How do you read into that?
I think that it in her desperation, she's trying to make something that doesn't make sense, trying to make it make sense. And looking for an answer because, you know, at that point when these notes started coming in, it was just, I think everybody agreed this is ridiculous, it's preposterous. But in their position of not knowing what's affecting this horrible thing that's happened to the family, that you get desperate and you start looking for answers. And if one little thing rings a little bit true to you, then you're going to, just out of survival, you're going to run with that. So I think that might be what she's reacting to, hoping that she's right, that it makes a little bit of sense. Her emotions are clearly driving her thought process. So that's why we as investigators, we have to step out of that emotional circle and keep an open mind and consider all possibilities. And as soon as you do that, you can see that the TMZ stuff was just a waste of time. Everybody's waste of time. And sometimes it gets hard for us to do that. If I was a lead investigator and I was sitting down talking to her, I don't know, I'd be crying myself. It's tough when you get involved in situations like that.
Yeah, for sure. Mike, just being a voice of reason here, there's some really nasty people in the chat. That might be true. I don't know. But I know on Twitter today, or X, God, I wish that thing would go away. And I can't stop looking at it. It's like a car wreck. I can't stop looking at X because I get news off there. But there are a lot of people on X today who were brutalizing Savannah Guthrie, blaming her, saying she's looking for attention. What would your response be to those people, Mike?
I don't know why anyone would say that to somebody that just lost their mother. It's a tough situation. You don't know what you're going to do. She's never been through this before. She's probably thinking she's doing, you know, what she can, hopefully to, again, this video goes out to millions, billions of people, and she's hoping for some information. Could it be closure, perhaps? I don't know. I've never been in that situation, so it's tough. For people to question her motives for doing this video, I think it's a little bit cold. I think it's tough. I mean, I'm a lost for words. How could you not watch that and get emotional? Like Phil said, it's terrible. No one should go through that. You know, I think she is giving us a lot of information. I do believe that the detectives probably told her that those ransom notes are legit. I don't think she came up with that on her own. I think they might have had proof that it was a legitimate ransom note. That's why she said that. I wish Hoda would have followed up with a question, and maybe she did, and they cut it. And why do you think those two are real? I wish she would have followed up with that question.
Yeah, and she may have. I don't recall, but I know the COE did. She did some editing of her own here. But Casey Jordan, to that point where she does say that the first two she believes are legitimate, do you think that's coming from law enforcement, or as Mike, you know, sort of implied, or you think that's her own intuition? She talked about her sister having a lot of intuition.
I think that is born of her struggle with guilt, right? Again, she wants to go worst case scenario. The only reason somebody would take her mother for ransom is because she is Savannah Guthrie's mother. And I think that just her fundamental belief that she needs to take responsibility for this tragedy, just because of her public persona, is what's driving that. If she has evidence from the police for that, where would they have gotten it from? Don't forget, these communications did not go directly to the family or the police. They came through the TV stations and TMZ. And so we have people on the outside who know what the content of that was, of those notes were, right? And somehow it hasn't spilled, but I think it is as generic as we have heard. Give $4 million, and if you don't give it within 2 days, it goes to $6 million. The thing that bothers me the most, why I don't think it's legitimate, in the very first one, it said, this is the only communication you will have from me, the only one. But then they followed up with another one. And to me, that is the number one clue, just what we know, forensic psychology. If you mean business, you do one communication, you give it to the family, you show proof of life, you give the account number, you get the money, and you're never heard of from again. So I don't believe these are sophisticated kidnappers, and I don't believe that whoever abducted her sent them.
Yeah, it sounds like a movie, too, like giving that ultimatum, you know, this is the only communication you're going to get. Sounds like something you'd see in a Die Hard movie.
And if you want $6 million, ask for it from the first time.
Yeah, right.
So the idea that it's that our interest is going to compound is just absurd.
Yeah. Crunch the numbers ahead of time. Okay, here's her reacting to the investigation. This, for those just joining, is the Today Show interview, which is the home of Savannah Guthrie, that she did with Hoda Kotb, who came back to the chair because Savannah's been absent. But this is about the investigation.
How did your family feel about the way the investigation was conducted?
Well, it's still going.
Yeah.
And people have worked tirelessly, and we see that, but we need answers. We cannot be at peace without knowing, and someone can do the right thing, and it is never too late to do the right thing. And our hearts are focused on that.
Phil Ramos, that's she's repeating a refrain there from one of her earlier messages, that it's never too late to do the right thing. But how do you read between the tea leaves there about her thoughts about the investigation? I mean, noticeably, she doesn't really, you know, thank anyone. She's certainly not thanking the sheriff, who's been on the receiving end of a ton of heat and is part of a recall effort right now. But she does say that they're working tirelessly, and we see that, but also that you know, the family needs answers. So how do you read that?
She's just frustrated, man. You know, there's so many things that she was hoping that would have been answered by now. All of us were thinking, you know, 54 days ago, yeah, give it a couple of days and we'll have it solved. Well, here we are, and no, we don't. So it's tough trying to keep a positive attitude with families like that when you present yourself with the information that you have. Hey, we came up with something last night. This is what it is. It may or may not be something, but we'll let you know. There's been so many incidents like that we're sitting here live covering traffic stops that involved a motor officer and stuff like that, you know, and you get their hopes up and they're thinking, okay, what's going on? Is somebody in jail? Did they find my mom? And it gets dashed. And then another one comes up and that gets dashed. And it's gotta be so frustrating for them and frustrating for the cops to have made little to no progress on this. Yeah, I completely understand the way she's feeling. She's not going to jump up and down and go team, until she's got a reason to go team. And right now she doesn't.
Yeah. Mike, I mean, related to that point, I got to assume that the detectives, and there are detectives, real live people who are working this case right now, that they, you know, sat and watched this interview. Are they beating themselves up? I mean, you guys are tough. I mean, you guys are all, you know, alpha males and females. You want to get the bad guy and you can't. It's got to be super difficult for the detectives right now.
Yeah, I'm sure it's frustrating. You know, they're processing all the evidence. They're doing the best that they can. And like Phil said, they might be chasing leads and it goes to nothing. So I'm sure it's very frustrating. I don't want a Monday morning quarterback them, but you know, did they do their? Are they second guessing themselves? Did we fumble this investigation? We were here talking about how these are bungling perps, and yet, you know, hopefully there was a lot of evidence. Did they process that? Did they gather all that? Why aren't there any tips coming in that's working? It's a lot. It's a lot to think about. Is it more than one perp? Is it one perp more than one perp? I don't know. No one's calling in any information. Is it one guy, one man story? He's not. That's it. He's not giving it up. Is that why we're not getting any leads regarding Crime Stoppers? So it's a lot to process.
Yeah. I mean, Phil Ramos, I don't believe that this is the case, but have you ever felt like you were failing a victim's family because you couldn't solve a case? I'm not saying that's the reality, but it might be the perception of these detectives. Like, I wish we could do more. I wish we could get our answers and the brother and sister, but we're not doing that. Have you ever faulted yourself?
Absolutely. I've been there many times myself. You know, I hit myself in the head. What am I missing? There's got to be something that I haven't seen. That's why you call other detectives. You call your partner. Okay, let's go over this again for the 10th time. What are we missing here? I mean, to this day, I carry a lot of guilt on some of the ones that I haven't been able to solve.
Yeah. Man, these guys, this is why I am very supportive of law enforcement. You see guys like Phil doing this a long time and Phil Waters, and these guys start to tear up on some of their cases, man. This is heavy, heavy stuff and big burdens that they carry. So all the respect in the world to these police officers. This is now Savannah talking about reaction, I guess, involving possible suspects here. And thank you to Elizabeth for gifting 5 memberships. Let's take a look at this.
Tell me what you thought when you saw those images of the person who took your mother.
I mean, it's just absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
It's just totally terrifying. And I can't imagine that is who she saw standing over her bed.
Yeah.
I can't. That's too much.
Yeah.
And I'm glad and grateful to the investigators and the technology companies that were able to find that video. Mm-hmm. Do I hope, at least with people of good heart and compassion, stop the irresponsible and cruel speculation that had started to swirl.
Let's talk about that for a minute.
I'm glad that people saw what came to our door.
You talk about the cruel speculation, the whispers, the innuendo that it was somebody in your family. How did you weather that?
It's unbearable.
Yeah.
And it piles pain upon pain. There are no words. There are no words. I don't understand. I'll never understand. And no one took better care of my mom than my sister and brother-in-law. And no one protected my mom more than my brother. And we love her, and she is our shining light. She's our matriarch. She's all we have.
Devastating. Casey, to you, she talks about simply not allowing herself to imagine that guy that we've all seen in front of the door, the Nest camera video. She cannot allow herself to imagine him standing over her mother as he presumably takes her the night of this abduction in the early morning hours of February 1st. But because she's bringing it up, leads you to believe that that has crossed her imagination. And how difficult is that?
Listen, I've dealt with a lot of families that have missing loved ones, a lot of times children, sometimes fearful that they could be the victims of serial killers and so on. You don't you can fight it all you want, but the brain has a horrible tendency to imagine the most worst thing that could have happened. You can't stop it. Not knowing, the brain will almost always go to the worst case scenario instead of the best case scenario. It just floods your brain. So it was bittersweet actually getting that piece of recovered video for two reasons. Now we had somebody to pin it on, A. B, he absolutely looks like the boogeyman, your worst nightmare of who's going to come to your house in the middle of the night. He fit that stereotype. And C, some relief, because it quells all of those horrific rumors that the family was involved. So she's going to have a whole mix of emotions. It gave her hope, which after 54 days has proved to not be false hope, but hope that did not turn into a suspect that they could apprehend, but a lot of false arrests. And it fed her nightmares. Now you can sit there and go, okay, the good news, the silver lining is that the family was not involved. And now people are finally believing that. But that's just yet another nightmare she has, that she had to actually deal with all the horrific rumors about her brother, her Annie's husband being involved. And even after the picture, I saw online people going, well, maybe it wasn't Tommy, but it's a friend of Tommy. It looks like a guy in his band. And, you know, people just want to, it's schadenfreude. You asked that earlier. Why do people do that on X? Why do they say it has to be Savannah's family? Because insecure people love to revel in others' misery. And, you know, let's call it out when we see it. But I for one, never thought it was the family. And I am so glad that, you know, people are getting away from that theory at this point.
Yeah, although there are a lot of idiots out there who still say it and double down on it. But that's just the way people are, I guess. I used to have a boss that said, people, the problem that won't go away. K9 Catherine joining us from Maui. Thanks for staying on this. Love you, K9. Haven't had a chance to talk to you in a while. Hope you're doing well out there. Once again, Hawaii getting hit by, I think, some bad weather. But Mike, they had a weather, all that innuendo, she calls it. But are you, I have a different question. I mean, are you surprised 54 days in that really the only thing that we've seen sort of publicly is that, you know, one video clip essentially of Nest cameraman. You surprised we haven't gotten a break with DNA or IgG or, you know, they even tried to collect other video. They could only get thumbnails. It just seems like there's no luck at all with this case. And I know, you know, it doesn't come from luck. It comes from hard work, but there's no breaks that we know of, because we just keep seeing these very limited pieces of evidence presented to us.
Yeah, I mean, again, we don't know what evidence they have, what they're processing. Was it contaminated? Was the crime scene contaminated? This made it more difficult. That's a possibility. They're keeping their cards pretty close to their vest. We got a little preview of what Havana thinks. I know people think 54 days is a long time, but I've worked on cases that went longer and we were able to solve it. I'm hoping that they're going to solve this eventually. That's my hope.
Yeah. I'm a bit behind the scenes. It's possible Savannah was referring to two ransom notes given to the family that we didn't know about. I think this sort of references hoax ransom notes also. Phil Ramos, you want to take that? I mean, because if I remember correctly, even the ones at the beginning went to TMZ, and correct me if I'm wrong about that, but I thought they all kind of went through TMZ at the beginning. Could there be notes, Phil, and I imagine you're going to say yes, that we just don't know about because it hasn't been released to the public, but then I'd be curious if Savannah would bring that up.
Yeah, that's brand new to me, man. That's the first time I saw it. In my view, anything that had to do with TMZ is just garbage. Just throw it out the window. It's completely irrelevant. Just don't even spend any more energy on that. If there were two legitimate ransom notices that went to the family, then that's something that's got to be looked at, and either looked at very closely or eliminated as soon as you can, because since there's been no follow-up, no proof of life, or no proof of anything else, you have to go with, well, it wasn't there. You know, like Dr. Casey was saying, okay, so here's $6 million right out of the chute. And, you know what? Never mind. Make it just one Bitcoin and I'll tell you a little bit of what you want to know. You know, go take a hike. Stop bothering me, man. I got more important things to do than listen to your nonsense.
Phil, not that this is nonsense, but I'd like to get your response to this from Owl on the Prowl, from Dave. Missing nobody crimes are difficult to solve. Thousands go unsolved. Every state has them. There are lots of missing people, but I don't know. I mean, how unusual is this, or an outlier is this, compared to sort of the typical missing person cases?
Yeah, that's accurate. We do have a lot of unsolved murders or unidentified dead bodies out in the desert. And you know, Tucson's not unlike the desert that surrounds Las Vegas. We have a lot of unidentified human remains that we send DNA samples to Othram and the other places to see if we could at least have a starting point. Who was this person? It's not unheard of to continue with the prosecution of a crime when you don't have a dead body. The burden becomes, can you prove that there was enough of a crime scene that a body would not have survived this crime scene? In other words, if there was a trunk full of blood, no human being's ever going to be able to come out of that trunk having lost that much blood. So it's a little bit harder to get over that beyond reasonable doubt burden that the state has when you don't have a body, but it's done. I've had a couple of cases where that was a successful outcome, but as a whole, they're not very often, but they can be done.
Mm-hmm. All right, two more clips, and then we'll get some final thoughts. You're listening to an amazing panel break down an interview that literally tens of millions, if not maybe hundreds of millions, are going to see. Here is Savannah continuing to talk to her friend and today's show anchor, Hoda Kotb.
When I was about four, I think. Mm-hmm. It's the house where I came home on a Friday night at 16, and my mom and sister were on the couch praying and told me that my father had died. It's the house where all of our memories are, good and bad. So it's hallowed ground. My mom loved and treasured that house. In good years and lean years, they were able to hold on to that house. That's my mom's safe haven. It's really hard to see that violated and the terror that she must have felt is unbearable. It's unbearable.
I mean, a very interesting point there, Casey, which is this is her home since, you know, she was basically born. She said all the memories were made there. And then she had that home violated. I mean, I can remember being like, you know, probably 8-9 years old, and someone broke into our car. It was back when you had like those like little cassette decks that would slide in and out. And I remember at 8 or 9 being annoyed, probably cursing back then, that someone had the audacity to break the window and steal. It happened in Manhattan, I think. Shocking. But to have this crime done at your childhood home, that is a real violation. I mean, how much harder and stronger does that hit?
It's tough. And again, I come at this from a personal perspective because my mom died in a house fire in my childhood home.
I'm so sorry to hear that.
That's all right. I mean, it was a few years ago, but to go through that house and to just go through the remnants of everything that you knew, the Christmas ornaments, the books, and to think you will never, and in this particular case, the house had to be torn down and razed. But, you know, you want to pick out the most precious things from your childhood home and save them from the stigma of that being a crime house or, you know, a scene of a death. and I've been through it, and it's incredibly difficult. I guess the really good news is that because this house is near Annie, and because Savannah has the financial means to keep that within the family, you don't have to do anything or make any decisions anytime soon, okay? But I can tell you they're never going to want to spend time in that house again because it is the scene of a crime. I personally had a house that was burgled and I couldn't live in it after that because it never felt like my home again. So I think they'll just hold on to the house because it's a way of preserving evidence. And when the right time comes for the family to decide what to do, whether they decide to sell it, to tear it down and create a park in Nancy's memory, whatever is best for the family, they will do. But right now, they should not be making any unilateral decisions about the house. It's there if you want to go there, but you don't have to. And that's actually a good position for her to be in, considering all the questions that we still have.
And Mike, thank you. This is a good time. I mean, just from a public service standpoint, we have a lot of women in the community. I mean, if you're a woman specifically and you're living alone in particular, what advice do you have if you're in a home? It could be in Nebraska, it could be in Wyoming, it could be wherever. What advice, as a retired NYPD detective who's seen some of the worst of the worst, what practical advice do you have? And then there's one more clip.
I mean, just, you know, have an alarm system, lock your doors, always tell people about your whereabouts if you're going to leave or go somewhere. I mean, get a dog. I would get a dog. You know, I think a lot of my female friends that are single, they have huge dogs, and that's a big comfort. So always keep your head on a swivel. Don't trust anybody. Don't open that door. Be alert.
Yeah, it's crazy. I was home today. The COE was running around with our oldest, and I was working on the podcast, and I hear our door squeak open because that's what it does. My two other kids were home, and I went and looked, and they're out in the front lawn. And I was kind of having this conversation with myself because, you know, we live in a quiet neighborhood. And when I grew up and, you know, in the 70s and 80s, it wasn't even a thought. I mean, your parents, it wasn't like, there's not a time in my life that I can remember my dad saying, you know, be safe. You okay? There was no school shootings back then. Nothing. I mean, I guess times, Phil Ramos, have times changed? Because all of a sudden I'm like, my kids are 3 feet from me on the front lawn and I'm like having heart palpitations. And then like 20 minutes later, they came in. I said, what happened? They said, there's a white van down there. Because I'm always like, beware of the white van, the creepy white van. And they're like, there's a white van. And there's like some painter's van, like, you know, five houses up. But are we living in more dangerous times, Phil Ramos?
Well, the short answer is, yeah, we are. And I can't beg you enough. Get an alarm system at your house, brother.
I got it. It's in. It's installed.
That's one of the best deterrents that you can have. You know, like Mike was saying, in my own neighborhood, and we have a really nice neighborhood, but there's some people who they're home watching TV up in their bedroom and every single light outside is off. Nobody knows that you're there. Come on, man, leave a light on at least in the front and the back. That's a great deterrent too. You don't want that. That's what bad guys look for, a completely dark house. If you've got a dark house over here and a lit up house right next to it, the bad guys are going to the dark house. Shine some light on your house, man.
You want to see my guard dog, you got to go to Instagram. She's on there right now, Ethel and Fred. Fred's a tougher one actually, but Ethel's got about a 15 inch long tongue. And she would lick your face. She actually might hurt you licking your face, but she's got a very deep, dark, or loud bark. But that tongue is unreal, folks. I don't think there's a longer tongue in America. But here we go. The final clip. This is now Savannah discussing grief.
Leaving Arizona to come back to New York. Why was that so difficult, that choice?
I looked out the window of the airplane and just thought, where are you?
Yeah.
That desert, that beautiful desert that she loves. Where are you? Yeah. How could I leave you?
But my mom taught me a lot about grief. Our family knows grief. My father passed when I was 16 years old. He was only 49. It was a shock. And I remember my mom saying, in those early days when Daddy died, like, you have to get up and decide and do. Just decide and do. And she had read that in a book that meant a lot to her and her grief. And so I remember, I always remember that. So I'm trying to decide and do. Just get up and decide and do every day. You know, I've felt terrible grief, and I felt unfathomable love and comfort. The goodness and kindness of God is remarkable and in equal measure to my sorrow. She showed us how to survive the unimaginable. When she lost my dad, she was 46 years old. She had 3 kids. She had never worked outside the home. She had to get up. She had to find a job. She had to mother 2 teenagers and 1 young adult just starting making his way into the world. She took care of her mother, her brother, who had Down syndrome. She invited to come live with us. She worked part-time to make ends kind of meet. She found a way, another job, a job she turned into a full-time job, a job she turned into a career. She had a second life of purpose and meaning. She had 1 million friends. She stayed strong for us. She was resolute. She was real. She grieved. I remember moments in my childhood, and those days after my dad died, she was so strong. But some mornings before dawn, she thought we were still sleeping, I would hear her crying at my door. To not be alone in her grief. So she taught me to be strong. She taught me to be true.
Man, super powerful. Shows the power of parenting. You just heard her, you know, lost her dad when she was 16. He was 49, and she would hear her mother periodically at the end there crying, but telling her you have to decide and do. My dad no longer with us, but he loved that Nike slogan, just do it. It's always about, he would always say, it's not about how you feel. It's about how you, you know, what actions you take, never about how you feel, but the actions that you take. So these are important life lessons. Mike Alcazar is retired NYPD detective. Great guy. It's been a sad show. You heard Mike lost his mom when he was young. Sorry to hear that. You heard about Casey losing her mom in a house fire. So people experience a lot of pain. Mike, your final thoughts here, hearing the pain that Savannah's going through.
I like that she told us about her mom. It sounded like her mom was an amazing woman that raised a very strong family. And I think that's a good thing, that you remember the good things. You remember everything that she did for you, the happy times, the happy memories. And that's the way you should remember her. This tragedy shouldn't define her.
Well said. Diane, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Almost unbearable to handle as a viewer. It is, very difficult in a way to watch because it's so powerful. Dr. Casey Jordan, sorry to hear about your mother. Same question, just your overall reaction to what we just watched. I mean, Savannah's got tremendous faith in a higher power. Do you think this is going to eventually get solved? And your final thoughts?
I do think that Nancy's body will eventually be found accidentally. I don't know that we'll ever know who is responsible, but just listening to the story of who Nancy was from Savannah's heart, not read from a script, was more powerful than anything she said in any of those messages in the first month on social media that were scripted and they were real, but they were appealing to, you know, people out there that she was hoping would return her. She's in a different place now. She's accepting that her mother is only with us, perhaps in spirit, and she is drawing on her mother's strength. So it was heart-wrenching, but I also find that Savannah is Nancy's legacy. If Nancy could get through such horrific grief, losing her husband suddenly, unexpectedly, having to sally forth and just put one foot in front of the other, well, gosh, her children have a great role model for how they should be behaving right now. And grief is just kind of this conveyor belt that you never get through the tragedy. You just get move forward until it the pain of it fades. And that just takes time. There's no way to put that on speed. It's just going to take time. Everyone heals at their own pace. But she's going to grieve for a long time. But I do think that getting back to work and just remembering her mother and how her mother did it after her father's death is how she's going to do it. She's going to pull Nancy's strength to keep moving forward.
Well said. Last word goes to the godfather of true crime, three-time Vegas Officer of the Year, retired homicide detective, infiltrated the Cuban mob, was at Tupac Shakur's autopsy. The list goes on for miles. Phil Ramos, your final thoughts here.
Just keep this family in your prayers, man. It'll eventually be solved. Whether we'll be able to prosecute someone or not remains to be seen. But, you know, Casey hit the nail on the head. What an amazing legacy for this family. And it just shows how strong this family is for them to be able to endure this the way they're enduring it. And God bless them.
Heavy night. Heavy topic, heavy thoughts. Everyone go home and if you are home, just I don't know, give yourself some wiggle room and be kind to yourself, be kind to someone else. Love you all, love you New York City, love you Connecticut, and love you Vegas, and bring Nancy home. Love you Tucson. We will see you tomorrow. Phil and Scott are back, 5 p.m. Eastern time. Grace, that's a word I was looking for. Give yourself some grace. We'll see you tomorrow. But you guys stick around with us.